The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
It's New Year's Eve, 1972. I'm in the middle of the circle holding hands with my sisters Hazel and Linda. My mum, dad and Nanny Noreen are all singing at the top of their voices. My mum looks happy, even though she still has the remainder of a black eye that my dad gave her on Christmas Eve. "Open the front door, Tommy," orders my dad. He calls New Year's Eve Hogmanay after an oatcake. I do as I'm told. Old Mr. Cleaver across the road is banging two dustbin lids together. I feel something brush past my leg, and then I scream when I realise what it is. It's a black cat, and it's obviously been run over. It collapses in the hallway right in front of me. Nanny Noreen goes ballistic and blames me. She's very religious and believes in Scottish folklore. "You stupid boy," she bellows. "You know the first to step through the door after midnight affects the fortunes of everyone who lives in the house. I've told you that enough times. So what do you do? Do you invite in a dying black cat? Now we're going to have bad luck all year. You wait and see." I stare at the cat as it takes its last breath. Little did I know at that point Nanny Noreen was speaking the truth. In a few days' time, my life as I'd known it would no longer be. Everything was about to change for the worse. My name is Tommy Boyle, and this is my story. Wow, what an opening. Kimberly Chambers, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
The new book is called The Sting.
Yeah.
And it's, the latest in how many bestsellers you've had to your name?
This is my 14th book, and this is currently number two in the Sunday Times bestseller chart. I missed out on number one this time slightly, but...
But you've had number ones all the way
along.
Yeah,
my last one was number one. I've had three out of the last, I think, five or six now that have been number one.
Yours was not the conventional route to literary stardom.
No, it certainly wasn't. I was years ago when I first left school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I left with very few, just a couple of like low-grade CSEs. And then I decided I wanted to work on the market. So I went down Roman Road. I didn't have many
You're an EastEnder, basically.
Yeah.
Barrow girl.
Yeah,
a
barrow girl. And my little chat-up line, because I'm still friendly with my old boss now, he said, I'll never forget. He said, I had this little thing walk up to me and I'd go, "Need any help?" And that was me chat-up line.
That was not, your job interview.
Not have you got a position for me or anything like that. So, need any help? And he said, I could see in your eyes that you had something about you. Anyway, I started off around the back of the stall, £8 a day. I was sort of the tea girl to start with, and they had all sell rubbish around the back. But one day, and he'd had it years, I think it was still there when I left there years later. No one had bought it. We still had these horrible tweed coats. Anyway, one particular day, some woman's come walking along and she's grabbed a handful and she's gone running off of them. So I thought, well, I can't have this. So I rugby tackled her, brought her down. We got the coats back. And from them, I was promoted round the front. And I turned into a really good sales lady for Harold's, you know. And I loved it. Roman Road was rocking back in the day. It was the market to be. Everyone got glammed up to the nines. So I loved my time there.
And you did that for a long time?
I did it for a long time. I did it until Tower Hamlets Council stopped the parking. They really, you know, everybody overnight stopped coming there because there's no actual car park you can park or even pay in. So there was nowhere. All these rich women that used to pull up in their Porsche convertibles and their Merc Sports and all that, they're not going to walk from Bow Road Station. It's not even a nice walk. It's a good 10 minutes and go back to their sort of, you know, houses in Chicago.
So this was the law of unintended consequences. This was the demise
Roman Road, yeah. It's sort of within 6 months. It was a different market, and there wasn't, you know, I used to get the buzz out of selling stuff and it being busy all day.
Yeah.
When it went dead, I just, you know.
So what'd you do after that?
Well, DJing. I'd always had a thing for DJing, and I used to do some DJing when I was on the markets, but obviously it was long hours because I'd have to DJ over weekend night and I'd have to be up to do Petticoat Lane at 4 on a Sunday. But I think when you're younger, you can survive with a little sleep. I'd never do it now. So I just went DJing full time just through my 20s. Never anything big. It was just like pubs and clubs and that type of thing.
What happened to bring you to books? I mean, you were, 38 when you started to write for the first time? Seriously?
Well, at the age of 29, you know, I'd left home by I'd left home when I was 21. But, you know, my mum kept saying to me, you know, you've got to get a normal job. You can't carry on with this for years. Because her friends kept saying, oh, we saw Kimberly the weekend, like on Sunday. Did she tell you? And I couldn't remember seeing him where I was drunk. So, like, I thought, I've got to start doing something normal where it doesn't involve drinking. So a pal of mine was working for a minicab firm in Romford. And she said the money's quite good. And at the time, I mean, I didn't have a penny to my name, really. But I had an old Ford Granada, which was an OK sort of car to cabin. And so I went cabin there, and I didn't like the days. I couldn't handle the traffic nor carrying people. I don't like carrying my own shopping, let alone anyone else's. But I went on nights where the roads were clearer. I was the only lady on night. Well, I wouldn't say lady, woman. Do you know what I mean? It's been a long while.
And were you able to handle yourself if you had trouble?
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I get on with most people. I can count on an handful of times that anyone was really horrible to me, or a couple of runners, kids that didn't have the money. But there was nothing major. I was lucky, really. So I got to the age of 38, and my friend Hazel, her old man had just got banged up, and it looked like it was going to be for a long stretch. So she'd done some hairdressing in the past. She was thinking about bringing some money in. She's got quite a big house. So she was going to make one room into a little hairdressing salon, and she said she was going to go on a refresher course. She said, why don't you come with me? Because years ago, I used to cut everyone's hair down the street. I'd had no training. I used to highlight their hair. The only thing I didn't do was perm, but I used to earn a few quid out of it, you know, when I was only 15, like, everyone wanted their highlights done. I mean, I'm lucky their hair never fell out, really, because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. But when she said that, I just said, do you know what? I thought, 38, starting as hairdresser, it's not going to be for me. I said, do you know what? I said, I've led a life. I'm going to have a go at writing a book, Hazel. And that was how it started. And I remember, like, you know, I just bought a pen and pad. I still write all my books by hand. Everything's been written by hand.
No computers?
No computers. No.
So there you were with some copybooks, and you write chapter one, chapter two. Was it tough?
The first three chapters were. I didn't know what to do, you know, and I'd gone on no courses. And, you know, if I'd have probably gone on like one of these literary type writing courses, they'd have probably knocked me right down. I just wanted it to be fresh. I didn't think I'd get past chapter one, because everything for me is a 5-minute wonder. But I think it took me a few weeks to write chapter one, two and three. But then it started to come easy. And by chapter seven, I was just sailing, like, you know.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Where I've got no work count, do you know what I did? I had a Jackie Collins book now, and her chapters were short, so I sort of counted out the words she had and roughly worked it out what word number I'd need for.
So it keeps you galloping through the book, basically. That's what happens. Well, you know, short chapters keep you galloping through the book.
Yeah, mine weren't short chapters, but I needed to know that the book was going to be long enough to send off at the end. And where I've got no word count, because I'm not on a computer. So I looked at Jackie. She had about, like, 82 chapters in hers. I thought, well, if she's doing this many chapters, if I double that, I can get away with 35, 40 chapters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So you just do the sums and work out how many words do I need.
Yeah.
How did you get the break, though? How did you get published?
Well, I mean, it was from Day Dot, really. I tell you what, I was very lucky, because a pal of mine is now like a second mum to me. She had the bookstore on Romford Market, Pat Fletcher, and she was the one that told me. She said to me, you need to get an agent. She said, you need the Writers and Artists Yearbook. So she got me a copy. And do you know what I liked about it? It was obviously I was living on a council estate. I don't talk in literary terms. It was ever so basic to read. You know, it wasn't, things weren't in literary terms in that book. I could understand it. And it sort of said, you need to, when you've finished your book, it's got all your agents, Ireland, yeah, London, everybody listed in it. And it said, you need to, you know, go back, polish up your first three chapters, put in a strong covering letter, like something that no one's going to forget you by, and, you know, good synopsis. So I did exactly, I read it over and over again and did exactly as they said. I finished the book, I went back, I made them first three chapters I could. I put the funniest covering letter in ever, where I thought, like, that'll take someone's notice. And within 24 hours, because obviously they only want the first two or three, normally three chapters sent off, and within the first 24 hours, I had an agent ring me up 24 hours later and said, wow, I love this. Can I have the rest of it? And then, like, over the course of the next week, I had another four agents. So I had my choice of agents.
Wow. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history, yeah.
Brilliant. I don't know how much you want to tell us about the plot of this book. It's about two childhood friends who end up on opposite side of the tracks.
It is. It's about, you know, as you've already read, it starts off with a young lad, Tommy. It's more his story than anybody else's. He's 12 years old, you know, in a normalish relationship. His dad, apart from his dad who works on the oil rigs, he comes home, and, you know, and sometimes him and the mum have got a volatile relationship. She looks like Barbara Windsor back in the day. All his friends fancy her because the Carry On films are out then. But, the story goes on. Something tragic happens in Tommy's life where he gets pushed from pillow to post, but he goes over, he ends up in South London and he meets a lad called Danny Darling. And Danny is to do with a villainous family. His dad Jack's inside for murder. And but they take him under his wing there. And they want him to sort of become part of the family. He can't legally move in with them because of the dad's police record, and that social service won't allow it. So he ends up with his uncle. Something goes terribly wrong there. And he ends up back in a children's home in Dagenham. On the, you know, and it's there he meets these four or five kids that have a big influence on his life. As a tragedy happens to one of them, but it's more about his story.
You've told us enough.
Yeah.
Let's not have spoilers.
There's no spoilers in that.
Now, tell us about the prospect of getting this on the screen or other books on the screen. Have you had any offers for the small screen? Because, I mean, they're made for telly.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've got an option out at a moment on the Butlers and the Mitchells, but I don't think it's going anywhere. I wrote the prequel. I've had a big series out on the Butler books. They'd be a bit like, you know, over here, you could liken them to sort of Love Hate, which I was a big fan of, that type of thing. But it's London gangsters and that. But I've got an option out on that at the moment, but I don't think we've got anywhere. I'm writing the prequel to that at the moment, which is Queenie, and it's all about how they end up like they do. And but we never got anywhere with it, really. It's been looked at. There was something similar ITV said going into.
I take it you know the kind of people who fill your book's pages.
I do. They all come to my book launches and that. But all my stuff is fiction. Nothing's
any,
really based.
Any resemblance to persons living or dead is entirely coincidental.
Yeah, no, but it is. I do make up my own villain. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very friendly with the Frasers. Frank's sons, like Dave and Pat, and I've often put them in a scene. They're not characters in there, but because they're pals of mine, they say stickers in the book, and I put them in one of the last ones, like where the two old girls, like Queenie and Viv, are fighting over, oh, he's handsome, that one, oh no, I fancy that one, and like that type of thing, so they get a little mention.
Well, it's a fabulous read and a very easy read. You fly through it. It's called The Sting. It's published this month. It's available from all good booksellers for about €15, and it is called The Sting, published by HarperCollins, and its author, Kimberly Chambers. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.